Now that I've recalled this episode, another event from around that time in my father's career comes to mind, which demonstrates perhaps even more impressively the special quality he came to possess. I should explain here that I am one of two brothers, and that my elder brother, Leonard, was killed during the South African War while I was still a boy. Naturally, my father would have felt this loss keenly. But to make matters worse, the usual comfort a father has in these situations, that is, the notion that his son gave his life gloriously for king and country, was sullied by the fact that my brother had perished in a particularly infamous maneuver. Not only was it alleged that the maneuver had been a most un-British attack on civilian Boer settlements, overwhelming evidence emerged that it had been irresponsibly commanded with several floutings of elementary military precautions, so that the men who had died, my brother among them, had died quite needlessly. In view of what I am about to relate, it would not be proper of me to identify the maneuver any more precisely, though you may well guess which one I am alluding to if I say that it caused something of an uproar at the time, adding significantly to the controversy the conflict as a whole was attracting. There had been calls for the removal, even the court-martialing, of the general concerned, but the army had defended the latter, and he had been allowed to complete the campaign. What is less known is that at the close of the South African conflict, the same general had been discreetly retired, and he had then entered business, dealing in shipments from Southern Africa. I relate this because some 10 years after the conflict, that is to say when the wounds of bereavement had only superficially healed, my father was called into Mr. John Silver's study to be told that this very same personage, I will call him simply the General, was due to visit for a number of days to attend a house party, during which my father's employer hoped to lay the foundations of a lucrative business transaction. Mr. Silvers, however, had remembered the significance the visit would have for my father, and had thus called him in to offer him the option of taking several days' leave for the duration of the general's stay. My father's feelings towards the general were, naturally, those of utmost loathing. But he realized, too, that his employer's present business aspirations hung on the smooth running of the house party, which, with some 18 or so people expected, would be no trifling affair. My father thus replied to the effect that while he was most grateful that his feelings had been taken into account, Mr. Silvers could be assured that service would be provided to the usual standards. As things turned out, my father's ordeal proved even worse than might have been predicted. For one thing, any hopes my father may have had that to meet the general in person would arouse a sense of respect or sympathy to leaven his feelings against him proved without foundation. The general was a portly, ugly man, his manners were not refined, and his talk was conspicuous for an eagerness to apply military similes to a very wide variety of matters. Worse was to come with the news that the gentleman had brought no valet, his usual man having fallen ill. This presented a delicate problem, another of the house guests being also without his valet, raising the question as to which guest should be allocated the butler as valet and who the footman. My father, appreciating his employer's position, volunteered immediately to take the general, and thus was obliged to suffer intimate proximity for 4 days with the man he detested. Meanwhile, the general, having no idea of my father's feelings, took full opportunity to relate anecdotes of his military accomplishments, as of course many military gentlemen are wont to do to their valets in the privacy of their rooms. Yet so well did my father hide his feelings, so professionally did he carry out his duties, that on his departure the general had actually complimented Mr. John Silvers on the excellence of his butler and had left an unusually large tip in appreciation, which my father without hesitation asked his employer to donate to a charity. I hope you will agree that in these two instances I have cited from his career, both of which I have had corroborated and believed to be accurate, my father not only manifests, but comes close to being the personification itself, of what the Hayes Society terms dignity in keeping with his position. If one considers the difference between my father at such moments and a figure such as Mr. Jack Neighbors, even with the best of his technical flourishes, I believe one may begin to distinguish what it is that separates a great butler from a merely competent one. We may now understand better, too, why my father was so fond of the story of the butler who failed to picnic on discovering a tiger under the dining table. It was because he knew instinctively that somewhere in this story lay the kernel of what true dignity is. And let me now pause at this. Dignity has to do crucially with the butler's ability not to abandon the professional being he inhabits. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my little podcast here. This is where I narrate passages from my favorite fiction books. If you like it, please rate and review it for me. And if you want to get in touch, find me on Twitter. It's at KGAO, K-G-A-O. and on my website, kevinhabits.com.